Welcome back to Slut PhD. I am your host, Julie Fennell, and I am here again with Doug Robinson. And this time we're going to be talking less about gender and more about, you know, the phrase in the culture for now is sexual orientation, but we'll get to how that's potentially problematic. Reminder, as always, that this is a podcast intended for people who are adults in the place where they are listening. So if you're in the United States, that means that you're expected to be age 18 or above. Hopefully you don't have too many trigger warnings for this episode, but I will say that probably a lot of the things that I'm saying are going to be a little bit controversial, both to straight, culturally straight and culturally queer people. And that's what happens when you hear from somebody who is culturally pansexual, which oddly enough doesn't get a lot of representation. So first of all, Doug and I realized that we didn't really talk that much about his sexual orientation in the previous episode. We talked a little bit about it, but not a lot. And then we started sort of meandering around it when, I guess I should also say here in the first couple of minutes, there's probably going to be a lot in this episode that's very explicit about sex. So, you know, maybe that's really great for some people, and maybe that's not. But we were just, like, chatting about this time at an orgy.
Yeah.
And so you were explaining... Why don't you tell your anecdote?
Well, it's just an interesting thing for me, right? Like, I love using my mouth. Like, I think mouths are fantastic. I think they're fun. And I was talking with someone who I had met at an orgy, and they were asking me if I have, like, a preference towards men or preference towards women because of what they saw at that orgy. And I was like, giving blowjobs left and right, having a great time. And it's that moment where I'm just like, all of my sexuality is like, I just like things in my mouth. Like, it's just a lot of fun. It feels very sexy. It feels very powerful. It feels very playful. So it's weird because, like, I think in my life, it's been very rare for me to be attracted to another man. Not to say that, like, the only people who can give blowjobs to are men, but it's been very rare in my life that I've ever been attracted to a cis man.
Yeah.
But as someone who loves putting things in their mouth, I've sucked a fair number of dicks. So I'm like, am I hiding something? Am I not, like, open to something? Then I think, no, I've tried to kiss a few guys in my life, and it's kind of terrible for the most part. Like, I can actually count on one hand the men that I've kissed, I'm like, oh, this actually felt okay. But really, it was because they weren't trying to, like, eat my face as it was happening. It wasn't like a competition of, like, who's going to be the top in this situation? It's going to be me. And I'm like, first off, hi. It's nice to meet you. Why is your mouth over my nose right now? But yeah, so it just got us thinking and talking about, like, sexuality and terms. Like, what is the term for someone who, I mean, I've looked at FetLife and I'm like, oh, hedonist, right? Someone who is attracted and appreciates pleasure works for me at times, but I don't want to be denying anything or trying to obfuscate anything. But just what does language and labels do, and how can they help clarify? And at times I'm confused at languages and labels, and I was curious about
all of the labels, right? Because there's not a label for, like, to put things in my mouth, right? Like, I mean, if it's
slut,
yeah, which is usually when people ask me, like, if you leave me, like, an open-ended, like, write your own sexual orientation, I pretty much always will write slut. But for me, what I actually mean by that isn't so much that I like to put things in my mouth, although I do, but it's more that I like putting things in other people's mouth. It's that for me, my own sexuality is and always has been defined by what I would describe as a fetish for difference. So I genuinely cannot achieve sexual satisfaction if there isn't a lot of variety happening. And it's very distinct for me from what other people I've met who need newness and novelty. which is a different set of fetishes, where like you constantly are looking for new partners. I actually don't. I have lots of people in my life who I've slept with for a decade or more, and I just keep them on rotation. Because for me, the thing that matters is just like not having anything be the same. And this has been true for me my entire life. So I have no meaning for myself personally. And like, I have no attachment to being bisexual. Like, I would be sad if I woke up tomorrow and I was no longer attracted to one gender or the other. But this has happened to me before. Thankfully, it went away. But it isn't uncommon for me to wake up and have my sexual orientation be different than it was when I went to bed. And much to my mortification, my partners can often tell, which is terrible. It's like my long-term male partners would be like, oh, you went gay again. I'm like, yeah, I'm sorry. But like, I do, this does happen to me. I think at this point in my life, it would be far more inconvenient if I woke up and was no longer attracted to men, because most of my long-term partners at this point are cis men. But I would be sad to no longer be interested in one sex or the other, but I certainly would find it to be completely expected given my history. But if I woke up tomorrow and I was no longer polysexual, I would be very distraught and confused. And not because like, oh, now I've lost this thing, which is like, who am I? Because this is the thing that I'm attached to. I've known since I was 5 years old, I'm poly. I've always identified as poly. I've always been poly. So the thing that is, that gives me meaning, I mean, I had no word for it, but the only words that I had for it at that point was being married is stupid. And then as I got older, it was being monogamous is stupid. And then eventually I realized, oh, you could be married and be not monogamous. But that's the thing that gives me meaning.
But just so I'm clear, because I'm kind of like trying to create a dictionary search right now.
Yeah.
You're talking that like poly, right? Like,
yeah.
But I think a lot of people call a relationship style.
Yeah.
You're identifying that as like a sexuality.
Okay. So it's a great, so part of the thing that really annoys me is I've lost a word here because someone decided to define polysexual and then they defined it as something else. And I've been defining it as this other thing for years and I forget what the official definition is, but I don't like it. So polyamorous means you like to have multiple relationships. Mm-hmm. And to me, polysexual should be, although it's not currently, polysexual should be people who like to have multiple sexual partners.
Mm-hmm.
And not just like to, but even if you're talking about your sexual orientation, that you need to have multiple sexual partners. I think you can be both or either. So like, I am polyamorous and I am polysexual. But I think it is entirely possible to be one and not the other. Like, I mean, it would be quirky to, well, no, plenty of, no, actually, see,
yeah.
Most of the asexuals I know mm-hmm. are in fact polyamorous, right? And I mean, it's often necessary if they're going to be in relationships with people who are allosexual, which is the term for people who are sexually attracted to other people. So yeah, I mean, it's totally possible to be polyamorous and not even be sexual at all. And I think I've definitely met people who were polysexual who identified as aromantic,
mm-hmm.
Which means that you are not interested in having romantic relationships. And for me, when I say polysexual again, I'm using the word as I mean it. But that said, like, we don't have a word for that thing, which is tiring. Just like, we don't have a word for, I mean, I think the word for, like, to put things in my mouth is supposed to be queer, right? Like, just like any, whatever was left, we gave the level queer to. But then the term queer, though, feels like it carries this implication of, like, I will accept anything.
When I think about the word queer, I also think queer in, as a cultural thing as well, as a political thing. Yeah. Like, I think queer has...
Oh, yeah, yeah. But yeah. I mean, in the context of a sexual orientation, and I'll get to why I hate that word in a moment, but like in the context of a sexual orientation, not in the social, political context of it. I feel like if we're at an orgy and someone is like, right. What are you into, Doug? And you say, I'm queer.
It means pretty much open for it all.
Open for it all, right. And that's like the implication of what that is in that context. And I think that actually doesn't really seem to describe that many people who I've met, right? Like, I feel like very few people I've encountered in my life, and I know a lot of very slutty humans, are actually just like, nah, it's all good, man. Whatever. Just show up.
For the listeners, I wish you could see the look on Julie's face. Like, the nah, it's all good, man, was such a good eye. I'm like, oh, that, you're missing it right now.
I don't encounter, like, I have definitely met in my life those people, but even for them, like, they'll still take whatever is offered, but I think they still actually have a preference. Yeah. Right? It's like, yeah, they enjoy, because there's a certain type of person, especially those for whom slut is their sexual orientation, who get a lot of pleasure in saying yes. Mm-hmm. Like, that is a thing that turns them on in and of itself. And for myself, when I say slut is my sexual orientation, I would actually describe myself as the reverse, which is to say that I find saying no to be a big turnoff. Mm-hmm. And which is why I prefer to arrange sexual situations for myself where I never have to say no, because, well, I should say, I like saying no in a complicated, consensual, non-consent way, but this is not good. This is not the episode to talk about that. In general, I just like saying no in sexual situations. And so a lot of times I try to arrange things very carefully to make sure that I never have to say that, which is complicated in this, because, right, like, of course, you know, consent is good and all that rot. But I wrote a whole book on that, in case you don't believe that I think that. But anyway, my point is that I end up arranging a lot of situations where I'm dominant, basically, largely to avoid ever having to say no. Like, this becomes an integral part of the way that I interact in kink context, because I dislike saying no that much. These other people I know are often fairly submissive, and they like saying yes that much, where it's like that, they're like, they enjoy saying yes so much that they're like, eh, whatever, sexual preference. Yeah, sure, I have one. It's hypothetical. But the thing that I really get off on is just saying yes.
So I guess, like, again, my question then is, do we call someone who someone who's, like, really into just saying yes?
Yeah.
Is there a label, or we say that there isn't a label for that, so therefore it just falls into the category of either queer or possibly a badly understood use of the term pan.
Ooh, badly understood use of the term pan. I mean, I think we've just been throwing everything into queer because it's what's convenient, and we can't come up with a label for everything. But we talked about part of how we were coming to this conversation was around the term pansexual, yeah, which ostensibly is defined as, you know, I'm supposed to be attracted to everyone, all genders and all biological sexes. And this is also particularly, I feel like, people who say things like, well, I'm not attracted to bodies or genders, I'm attracted to the person. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, are there any people who aren't attracted to the person? Like, what? I've never really been able to make good sense of that.
I'm not attracted to bodies. I'm attracted to the person.
Yeah.
But for most people, a certain amount of attraction to the person comes into the chemistry of.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, like, hypothetically, pansexual means you're mostly attracted to the person. And then generally speaking, when I ask people for more details there, I'm like, so do you think that you're, like, genuinely, like, 50-50 men, women? Or, like, you know, for a lot of people, it's like, well, it's not even, we're not dividing between men and women, right? We're going to throw the whole spectrum in there and say, hey, you know, anyone on that spectrum, like, do you genuinely feel like you're equally likely to be attracted to anyone from any of those groups? And I rarely encounter someone who says yes. Now, I will say, and this is a point that I find really interesting, I am much more likely to find somebody who says yes, who identifies as a cis woman, than who identifies as a cis man. But also, I think I've actually come to strongly suspect that this is a biologically sex-linked trait. There's a lot of research that suggests that testosterone does things to the way that one is sexually attracted to people. And makes it more likely that one becomes more fetishistic. So the thing that we classically define as a fetish is very rarely found in people without higher levels of testosterone. And I did see at least one study that I've never been able to find again that claimed, at least in the early periods where, like, trans men were transitioning, you sort of induce fetishism in them at that point. Mm. When I say fetishism, I'm talking about, you know, like, this classical definition, not popularly understood, but classical definition of a thing that you need to achieve sexual satisfaction. So, you know, maybe it's something like bondage, maybe it's something like, I mean, most of the time they're really innocuous. Like, you hear about ones that are really far-fetched, but they're quite rare. I have a partner with a genuine fetish for long hair. Like, he was never really going to be attracted to people without long hair. I knew and met another guy who had a fetish for having a woman put her hands over his eyes, like from standing behind him and put an eye. And part of the reason why these things tend to be pretty innocuous on average is because, as far as we can tell, they are induced around age 4. So, you know, people only encounter the really weird stuff at age 4 if something very bad happens to them. But I think in my formulation of the universe, being monosexual is a fetish, which I realize maybe is a very offensive way to understand the universe to some people. It might make everything make a lot more sense to others, where it's like, okay. And part of how I see that this happens is I meet people, like one of my partners who identifies as straight. He's a cis man who identifies as straight. And for him, he's like, oh, the thing that I am attracted to is like secondary feminine characteristics. Like, he wants somebody with breasts. He wants somebody who's like got soft features on their face. These are the things that he is attracted to. And like, that's what matters to him. And that's what, and he identifies as straight because that's not what he has. But I've met two cis male partners who identified as straight or straight-ish, at least, for whom the key factor for them was a vagina. And they're like, oh yeah, totally fuck. Like, people who identify as like trans mask or whatever, that's fine. And I'll do my best to be respectful, but like, ultimately, why I call myself straight is because I'm looking for the genitalia that is not what I have between my own legs, which I find fascinating, right? But it's like, all right, if we start to reorganize this in terms of fetishes, it's like, well, you have a fetish for vaginas. Oh, you have a fetish for breasts and secondary feminine characteristics, right? And I think that part of why male, and I'm using that term carefully here, male sexual orientation tends to be a little bit more rigid, isn't quite the word I want, but more constrained, I think, is because of this whole like tendency to be more fetishistic and limited potentially by biology. And so I very, 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 very rarely meet people who are cis men who are like, yeah, whatever. But I meet a number of people who are cis women who say, yeah, whatever, I'll take it all.
I have a question here.
Please.
And I'm going to jump back a little bit to the person you met who has hands go over their face.
Yeah.
Right? Did that person say that all they need? Because it sounded like you said if a woman puts her hands mm-hmm. over their face.
Yep.
That's the only way they know how to experience sexual pleasure.
Full sexual satisfaction.
Full sexual satisfaction. My question is, and this is going to sound ignorant, and I want to be very loud that like I am moving in that way.
Yep.
If someone has well lotioned and manicured hands.
Yep.
And they could be perceived as the hands of a woman. But that person themselves does not identify as a woman.
Yeah.
Like, because that's where the question, because like, it wasn't hands over the face.
I know.
It was a woman's hands.
So part of why that had come up as being so specific in his case was because he was bisexual and more attracted to men than women.
Ah, okay.
And so it was a particularly quirky thing that basically, even though he's more attracted to men than he is to women, he's got this fetish for a woman, and I don't think he'd had a chance to like really explore like the complications of that, but certainly it sounded like he'd prefer it if he could be into someone who has like womanish hands, right? Because he's more attracted to men. And this is part of what gets really complicated about fetishes is they can be so weird. So like my partner who has the fetish for long hair is like also bisexual, but like he almost never meets men with long hair. And so for him, a lot of being attracted to men is a little bit hypothetical because it's like, how many men have hair that long that actually looks good? Not that many. And so, it's like the things that can happen with fetishes in terms of like overlapping sexual orientation can get increasingly odd.
I am thinking how we, in talking about sexual orientation, we've actually, in a way, like, carved it in a place that, like, kind of silos it.
Yeah.
Because I think this is the first time I'm really hearing about fetishes being in a cross-section.
Yeah.
And I guess a question that I now have is, how do we engage sexuality broadly, right, without always trying to then silo it as this thing? Going back to this language of polysexual as a term that, like, I was confused by when you said it.
Mm.
And then also this understanding of pansexual. And also I've heard this term omnisexual. So I'm very, like these things seem like they're very encompassing.
They are.
But are they as encompassing?
As they sound.
Yeah.
And so I recently come back to the term omnisexual, and I'm thinking about embracing that for myself. So many years ago, like in the early 2000s, there was no, that vocabulary was very young. And so it was like, there's bisexual, and people were starting to want more words for things. And so I came up with the term omnisexual by myself, and then found out that other people had done it as well. And then I was fascinated to find that people have gone back and revised it and given it a separate definition than pansexual. So they're like, omnisexual is supposed to mean somebody who is attracted to all sexes and genders, but not necessarily equally, or someone for whom, like, these things still matter, basically. And so I really have always been frustrated by the term pansexual, because it's just not my experience of the world in terms of, like, I was like, no, I really do care. Like, I don't not notice. And I regularly will go out some nights, especially when I'm at, like, kink events or whatever, be like, yeah, I'm really looking for bio dick. And sometimes I'm, like, out and, like, yeah, I'm really looking for some bio pussy. And I am fascinated by the fact that I don't often meet people who seem to have this experience of any sex. Like, I feel quirky in the fact that I end up with, like, yeah, I'm really looking for this particular sexual experience in any given day or moment.
Does that then leave room for the fact that, like, I mean, different people, as well as different bodies, can create different experiences?
Go for it.
It is the experience you are looking for, and you understand that some bodies or people might be better at getting that experience that you are looking for? Or is it more, as you were talking about earlier, that you might, your sexuality, like, varies?
My sexuality definitely varies. And I did ask a couple of times in some sessions that I've been at when I've been teaching at kink events where there's a lot of bisexuals around. And I was asking people, I was like, do other people have this experience where, like, you know, the way that we at least culturally understand bipolar disorder, which isn't actually a really way it tends to happen on people, where it's just like you're sexual, rather than having a stable bisexuality. In fact, you have this unstable, wavering sexuality that sort of moves between being more straight and more gay. And actually, a number of people raised their hand when I was in a small group. Like, this was like 30, 40 people. I had several people raise their hand and like, oh, yeah, I know what that's like, which I thought was interesting. So I definitely don't think I am alone in that. But I do struggle sometimes when people are asking, like, what is it that you're looking for in these moments? So, like, well, having a vagina, usually, if I say I'm out looking for pussy, is not the correct answer.
Yeah.
Right. So, like, I was like, no, if I say I'm out looking for pussy, here's what I mean. I'm like, I mean that I want it to do X, Y, and Z. So there's like a functional list of things. Mm-hmm. But also that I want it to be, like, conceptually this thing. So, like I want it to be called, like, a pussy, basically, or a C word. I don't know. Can I say this? I mean, I'm going to say it on the podcast. Pussy or a C word, right? But, like, you know, by the time we get to the people who are like, that's my front hole, I'm like, no, we're into a different category on this particular sexual experience that I am seeking, which is not to say I haven't had awesome sex with people with front holes in my life, because I absolutely have. But if I say I'm out looking for pussy, by the time you get to the point where you're calling it a front hole, you're not fucking the same way anymore, in my experience. You're like, you've moved along conceptually. So clearly I've got, like, there's a biological thing happening there, but then also there's like some sort of mental thing. And for a lot of it too, for me, it's like how somebody smells. So like I have a notion of what a pussy smells like and I want it to smell like that thing. But, you know, do I care whether or not it's attached to somebody who strongly identifies as a woman or who is very femme or who is genderqueer? And the answer is frequently, I don't seem to care that much. I mean, I do care about it being attached to a person who I like. Well, this is where this gets complicated, right? Yeah. Because I do in this moment, and I think often in general, care about this person, .. and what is between their legs.
I guess, now it makes me think about this term demisexual that comes up.
Just so troubled.
Well, is it? Because I don't know, right? Like, I meet people who say, like, oh, I'm more attracted to the person than, like, the bits. And that, in a way, isn't saying, it doesn't sound like what you're saying, but it does sound like you value the person in the same way a demisexual person values the person, but that person's bits will then inform the experience you want to have with them.
I mean, part of why I say the label demisexual is troubled is because no one has really clearly agreed on what the definition of it is. Ooh. And so I'm going to get in a lot of trouble. I'm sure there's going to be lots of comments from angry people underneath. But, like, the best definition I ever encountered for demisexual when I was talking to somebody who identified as that was, I cannot know if I am sexually attracted to somebody unless I already have an emotional connection with them. And I thought that was a very compelling thing because I think that is actually rare enough to warrant being a separate identity. I think the popularity of the term demisexual arose in the context of people feeling lots of pressure to engage in casual sex. And this is especially ironic because people aren't having anywhere near as much casual sex as we believe that they're having. And so, but people came to feel like they needed a way to get out of having casual sex, basically, because there's a lot of, they felt like there was a social pressure to have casual sex. And they're like, increasingly the people are using the term demisexual to mean, I don't like casual sex. And that's not what it was meant to be. And part of why that's not what it was meant to be is because most people don't like casual sex. No matter what you see on TV, no matter what you see in the movies, most people do not have casual sex and most people do not like to have casual sex. Of both sexes or any sex, right? Like men or women, like or otherwise, people mostly do not like to have casual sex. It is unusual to want to have casual sex, especially if you are a cis woman. Those are the people who need a label.
Can we do a quick definition again? Like, how are we even defining casual sex? Because, like, I think about a lot of the spaces that we've been in, and, like, would we call those spaces places of casual sex? Because I have found a deep intimacy that can be created in those spaces and deep connections that then extend beyond the moment that don't quite feel the way my idea of casual sex is.
From a sociological standpoint, the places you and I are coming from qualify as very casual sex.
They do.
They absolutely do.
Okay.
Obviously we can sit here and we can revise these definitions, but the term casual sex as it's used sociologically was meant to specifically mean like sex outside of any sort of dating context, basically.
Any sort of dating context.
Any kind of dating context.
So this idea that people are currently like in a talking phase, that would still, well, no, really, that would still consider a dating context.
Yeah. And so like, I mean, I believe the research these days is pretty clear that like if people are having sex, which increasingly they're not, but if they're having sex with new people that like, there's a pretty clear 3-date rule, even now. Mm-hmm. At least the last, when I say even now, I actually haven't seen since the pandemic. Everything has changed since the pandemic. No one has those numbers yet that I'm aware of, but maybe someone has gotten them and they haven't published them yet. But at least pre-pandemic, there was still a pretty clear 3-date rule of like, you're supposed to see somebody, you know, you're supposed to do 2 dates and then on the 3rd date you have sex and then mostly if you didn't, then you didn't. And when I did my survey of people in the BDSM scene in 2017, it was the same thing. Like most people, if they were going to have sex with the person, they had sex by the third play date. And if they didn't, then they mostly weren't going to. So like, I mean, that was 2017. So it was kind of a long time ago now, but like, at least, you know, pre-pandemic, the dating world was operating both queer and non-queer pretty hard with this like 3-date rule. And so basically under that 3-date rule, and especially if you're outside of the context of a date at all, that's what gets this label of casual sex. Especially if you're talking about context where like you have sex with them and then you ask their name, that's casual sex. If you had sex with them and then like you didn't even bother to ask their name, this is definitely casual sex. And it doesn't matter for this context, like how intimate you found it.
I'll be very clear. I've always known their names beforehand. Maybe a reminder is needed afterwards.
I cannot make this boast, but I have always asked afterwards. But my point is that this taste of yours and mine for this is actually pretty rare, statistically speaking. I would even go so far as to say, very rare. But increasingly, I think a lot of young people felt like they were supposed to be that thing. This is what showed up on TV a lot. And then they were turning down offers. And so the term that became increasingly popular for turning down offers was, oh, I'm demisexual. Because no one gave them a word for, oh, I don't like casual sex. And demisexual sounds cooler than just saying that, right?
When you say no one gave them a word for, can we also just like acknowledge that it's not even that they didn't have a word. Like, we believed this expectation existed, right? Yeah. This expectation. So not even that, like, oh, we don't have a word for it. It's just like, oh, this is what we're supposed to be doing.
This is one of those, when in sociology, we talk about the difference between normative versus normal. Normative means the things that you feel like you're supposed to do. Normal is what people actually do. So most of the time, these things are the same, but sometimes they're different. The classic example being eating breakfast. So we can all list in any culture, in American culture, we can all list things that are quote unquote breakfast foods, eggs, sausage, toast, orange juice, coffee, right? But what's the normal thing to eat for breakfast?
Eggs, toast. No, I'm not. We're not changing. No. Breakfast is the most important meal of the day.
That is a lie. That is from a fucking, that is a study. That is just a bunch of capitalist bullshit.
This podcast is not, brought to you by Big Breakfast.
It is not actually the most important meal of the day. Actually, I also cannot live without breakfast. But statistically speaking, the average adult does not eat breakfast, right? So it is not normal to eat breakfast, even though it is strongly normative to eat these things for breakfast.
Can I be that person?
Go for it.
Technically speaking, to eat breakfast is simply to break fast. So as long as you
ate it all today?
Yeah, breakfast.
Yeah, right.
Just don't have it be like mac and cheese. You can't have mac and cheese for breakfast.
I love macaroni and cheese for breakfast. But anyway, when it comes to sex, I think increasingly there's a normative sense that casual sex is kind of what's expected. There's all these hookup apps out there. And so people think that's what they're supposed to do, even though statistically, it's still not what people are doing. But anyway, to come back to the original question, which long before this, which like, what is demisexual? I think that saying that demisexual means that you cannot know whether or not you are attracted to somebody unless you have an emotional connection with them is a fantastic distinguishing feature. To say that you are not likely to have sex with somebody unless you feel an emotional attachment to them, that's just normal. It is abnormal to be me who is willing to have sex with people who I do not have an emotional attachment to. And I'm the one who needs the word here, especially as a cis woman. That is actually quite strange in the context of the larger culture. And so I think it's interesting that we ended up reversing that. And there is no word for that, for being like, yeah, bring on the casual sex other than slut, which, you know, sure, we took on as an identity, but we took on as like a label of pride, but it is a label of identity. It's very ironic to me that we labeled the thing that is actually quite normal. And I also hasten to say that even though I enjoy casual sex, I much prefer having sex with people who I have an emotional attachment to. And statistically speaking, almost everyone does. Like, in fact, like, generally speaking, you probably should see a therapist if that's not true for you. And I'm not saying that in a judgmental way, but just in a way of saying that is often a sign of certain types of trauma, abuse, etc. Like, you should make sure that you have been evaluated by somebody. If you are somebody who says, I love sex, but I mostly like having sex with people that I barely know, like, that actually tends to be a sign of having certain types of psychological issues that you should at the very least get checked out, which is not meant as a judgment, just as meant as a caution, and say, almost everyone prefers to have sex with people who they're emotionally attached to. So why name that? And I want to say, I think it's entirely reasonable and low, I would even argue, a sign of good self-preservation to say, I don't want to have sex with people unless I have an emotional attachment to them. Like, that to me is adaptive. Having sex with someone is a very vulnerable thing to do. Like, I would never have casual sex with people who I met in a bar. That sounds terrifying to me. Personally, I would never have casual sex with someone who I met on an app. That sounds terrifying to me. But when I'm like in environments where I'm surrounded by a bunch of other people that at least pretend that I feel safe, and then I'm like, oh, great, okay. But like, I think it's a perfectly reasonable adaptive strategy to be hesitant to engage in sexual interactions with people who you do not know well.
I'm really like really interested in this conversation as a whole in terms of this creation of the word to be almost a shield for a thing that people felt they needed a shield for. Do you think in terms of like labels in general when it comes to sexual orientation that many of these things have been created in a response to circumstances?
Yes. I think that's a great way to think about it. So I think a lot of the labels are there because some of them are mating plumage. Right. So it's like I wear this label on me as the way to attract the correct people. And so, for example, I had an ex who was like, well, I don't like to call myself straight because I am very attracted to lots of people who are trans masc. But the things that I'm attracted to about them are ultimately the things about them that are sort of female. Right. Like, he's not really attracted to them as men per se. He's attracted to, you know, the things about them that look womanish. So like that gets complicated, right? But he's like, I don't want to call myself straight because then I'm not even going to attract the right people. And plus I'm going to offend them. Fair, right? So there's a degree to which there's a little bit of mating plumage in there.
Like what does that, if someone is saying that they are a straight person or someone who I, for the most part, identifies as straight, says they are attracted to trans mask people, but for what is possibly still feminine in them.
Yep.
Is there a way, and forgive my language, but like, is there a way to unlearn that? Like, right? Like, because I've had conversations with a number of people that they want to be seen for their identity, but if their identity is one that at times might, to another person, feel unclear. How do we then practice unlearning or inviting our ability to be like, no, I am attracted to you for the trans man that you are and not because of these feminine features that you still have?
I am hardly the correct person to answer that question because I don't think I really require much in the way of unlearning. So I don't really know. And also, again, I strongly suspect that it is different for males and females. And again, I'm even going to be daring and say that I think that biology matters in terms of sexual attraction. God, I've gotten this far into this episode and still haven't even differentiated sexual orientation, identity, and attraction. Do I think you can unlearn these things? I mean, maybe, but I think it's more just a question of like, what are you into, right? Like, I don't know. For some people, it's words. You have a fetish for words. I have one guy who tells me that he's like, I am definitely attracted to trans masc people, but like at the point where they start taking masculine pronouns, then I'm usually not attracted to them anymore. And he was like, I wish that wasn't true. My life would be easier if that wasn't true, but it is true. And I was like, fascinating.
Well, what's so exciting, and I mean exciting, is it just is a reminder that there are so many parts of this that we think are like, ah, yes, once we get the label, we now have an understanding.
Right.
But really, there is to my mind, always something more to mine. And if the idea is to use language to be specific and also inclusive, where do we put that person who is like, I'm attracted to trans mass people to the point that they use? But the question then would be for me, well, what if multiple people at multiple different points in their transition start to use? So like, have we actually lost the visual markers because the language overtakes?
Well, I mean, I think it's perfectly reasonable. As someone who, I would say, one of my biggest fetishes for words, it makes complete sense to me that you would care a great deal what words somebody uses to talk about their sexual body and experience. And so, like, again, we just assume this is all about bodies or like the way somebody looks. And I'm like, for me, I think probably more it's like, I care about your genitalia, your face, and like words that you use.
Well, and with this idea of words, it makes me think then also of the mind.
Yeah.
Right. So it goes back to this idea of like attracted, have the emotional connection to the person. I'm understanding the person that you are. And once I understand your understanding of self, that then allows me greater access to how I think we can interact.
Yeah. And that's another one of these complications, right? Where like, are you attracted to this person as they are right now, or is they imagine themselves in their ideal vision of themselves?
Well, don't even get me started on ideation of people. That is a different episode.
Yeah, but sure. But I mean, this is a complication of the thing, right? Where I'm like, as someone who really, really wishes that my own body had like, I am a cis woman, sure, but I really, really, really wish that I had a bio dick. And I don't mean one that I can just take off at whim. I mean, no, really, I want to be me, but with a dick. So I want to keep my vagina, but I want to have a dick. I will give up my clit for a dick. And like, we lost the word hermaphrodite for that because we decided it was offensive. And it's sad. It has a very sad medical history, blah, blah, blah. But like, I love Aphrodite. Hermaphrodite was named for her child, Hermaphroditus. And I'm like, I would love to reclaim this in a religious, spiritual way, et cetera, et cetera. But my point is, I feel like my own notion of my idealized biological sex exists at that point. Mm-hmm. And so I enjoy engaging sexually with people who also find that to be hot. And I have on numerous occasions ended up having sex with people who identify very reluctantly as cis men, but who clearly would like to have vaginas. Right. And so the way that we engage sexually is very much in conversation about the fact that we would like our bodies to be different than they are. It's not going to happen. But like the sex that we have and the way that we talk about the sex while we're having it and the way that we talk about sex when we're not having it is often influenced by the fact that this is not the bodies that we have, but it's the bodies that we'd like to have. And so to me, that's a very queer thing to do.
Yeah.
Like, sure, we may go out into the world and 1000% passes straight. I look like a cis woman presenting very femme. They look like a cis man presenting reasonably mask. I'm like, oh yeah, but you don't know what we do when we get home. And so like you can label the sex queer, even if the physical interactions of the people isn't necessarily very queer. And by queer, I'm specifically saying here, like not heteronormative or not straight. But how does this get into the thing that I swore that I would talk to? And I'm so far in this episode and haven't. So what's the difference between traditional terminology, sexual orientation, sexual attraction, sexual identity? And why I hate the term sexual orientation so much is that it is born out of the idea that you are born this way. And that language is a political rhetoric that I think is very excluding to bisexuals, also relatively excluding to lesbians, honestly. It was mostly done on them. Male sexual orientation, as I said, is just more fixed. And so they were like, hey, look, we have all this research showing that like cross-culturally men seem to be born gay. I'm like, all right, yeah, that's true. Like a big chunk of men who are gay, like they're like, yeah, I knew this by the time I was 5. Some women who are lesbians say that they knew it very young, but it is much rarer. But find the bisexuals who are like, yeah, I was like definitely bi by the time I'm 5. Pretty rare. Like it's very uncommon.
But do you think it's uncommon because there are fewer reference points to that? That like actually if we had more visual references in our media to bisexuality, more young people at 5 or 6 could be like, that's the thing that I've been experiencing as a young child.
I mean, I'm sure that it would increase, but like that when we look for the types of biomarker ties, so for example, you know, the classic being twin studies, right? Like you're looking at identical versus fraternal twins versus, siblings. You just don't find the same strength on are they both bisexual that you find on the are they both gay men, which is hilarious because my husband is straight and his identical twin brother is gay. But it's only about 50% when you're talking about identical twins. So like the idea of sexual orientation is there. I think that we're excluding a lot of possibilities in terms of environmental causes. And also more than anything, what I want to embrace is the idea of choice. I want to embrace the idea that you can choose to be gay and it's still fine. I don't personally care if you whether you were born this way or not. That was a choice that was made politically in the 90s when repeatedly surveys showed that if you supported the idea that people were born gay, you were more likely to support gay marriage. It was a choice for a lot of LGBT like organizations to pick up this rhetoric of born this way to try to gain more political support for gay rights. I would love to evolve here in the 21st century to say, you know what? I don't care whether you were born this way. I honor the fact that you choose to be this way, and that's hot and awesome and cool. And I feel like if you are bisexual, there's a degree to which you always feel like every day you make a choice. And I think it's part of why we end up feeling excluded because we make choices and like, well, did I choose to be straight today? I don't know. Maybe I could have chosen not to be. I'm attracted to both men and women. And if you told me like you must marry a woman, I'd be like, okay, like I could do that. I'd be happy. If you told me you must marry a man, I could do that. I'd be happy. If you tell me because I'm polysexual, you can only ever have one, I'll be fucking miserable.
Yeah.
Right? And like, anyway, so that's the idea of sexual orientation. Sexual attraction is just a more vague term that like doesn't try to encompass so many things in it. But like a lot of the times these labels that we're trying to get are trying to get at like romantic attraction, sexual attraction, all kinds of other things. And identity is like what gives you meaning. This is part of why I started this by saying, well, the thing that gives me meaning is being attracted to multiple people. And like, I think part of what's complicated about saying you like having things in your mouth is there's no identity for that, right?
No.
That doesn't give you that doesn't give you meaning.
Well, I will also say that like my, you know what's given me meaning actually is identifying as someone in the BDSM community.
Yeah.
Right. Because again, I think meaning for me and possibly here for you is derived by the community that then holds me.
Yeah.
And that invitation. And I found that the BDSM community, in my experience, has been one of deep affection and deep understanding and a desire to engage with the whole of a person. Whereas before I was in the community, I felt that sex was often used as kind of, a part of me was left out.
Yeah.
But in sex, it was like, oh, this is the moment. Whereas in BDSM, like, I feel like my mind is asked about. I feel like my desires beyond the physical are asked about. So in terms of identifier, as someone who would say, I like things in my mouth.
Yeah.
I found that I say that in a BDSM space and people are like, oh, we got it. Like we
understand.
We even without further language, know how to engage and support and invite.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think in general, BDSM community is such an expansive understanding of what sex and sexuality can be. And so it's like a space where I can say things like, I tend to be attracted to fairly feminine people and masculine people who look good on their knees or are very good with rope. That's a sentence that makes sense in that context.
I understand exactly.
You understand exactly what I mean.
I can bring in three people. Right. Fit that.
You meet like if I'm at a kink event and I use these words, then people are like, here, let me bring you people who will match the thing that you just described. I mean, I think all of these words are just us really struggling to come to terms. Another thing I was having fun with thinking about this the other night in terms of the conceptualization of my own sexuality, and maybe this won't make sense to anyone who didn't grow up in the 80s and even possibly people who did. But I used to have this toy when I was a child that was like for fashion design, and I loved the shit out of it. And maybe I'll try to post a picture of it in my post under this episode. But basically it was this weird little kit where you had these plates and you had like somebody's head and shoulders. I think they were all women. So you have like a woman's head and shoulders and you have like a chest and you have legs. And they were lined up in such a way that you could mix and match them. And then you'd like do like kind of a scratch thing. So then you had a whole picture. So, you know, you design these different outfits based on the head, the hat, the shoes, the skirt, and you'd mix and match, but then it would be a cohesive thing. And I was thinking about how much my experience of sexual orientation, such as it is like this game of mix and match, where I'm like, no, I am very interested in the way that the head, the middle part, and the lower part interact with one another. I don't necessarily demand that they all quote unquote match traditionally, and I'm actually quite interested if they don't. But I will notice.
Yeah.
And I think that's less of a thing in like the identity of queer, right? Is the noticing. And to some degree, I feel like it's less of a thing in the identity of implied in the label of pansexual. But I feel like the label of omnisexual there was at least to someone who's trying to define it now, is saying, well, no, I do notice. I'm still into it, but I notice. And I'm curious, as we continue thinking and evolving in our cultural conversation about these things, like how much pressure we put on people to say that they're not noticing when they are, or the degree to which people just genuinely don't. Because like we're seeing a huge rise in documenting in recent research in the number of young people identifying as bisexual, something else, and I don't know, especially like in each of those categories separately, huge rise. And so I'm really especially curious now, like, what is going on with the people who say something else and I don't know? What is it that we aren't capturing with the existing labels? And how will this proliferation of other labels come to encompass as people understand more and more of who they are? And, you know, someone who is like, I mean, I am attracted to men, but I prefer it if they're submissive, you know? Like how much that comes to be part of our cultural conversation of sex and sexual identity. Anyway, these are some of my rather educated and very opinionated rambles on this. And I really wanted to thank Doug here for having a thoughtful bouncing back and forth as we were chatting about this coming in, and him being willing to sit here and ask the fun questions and listening to me ramble. And thank you for listening. You want to sound off too?
Yeah, no, this was a good time. I love a conversation where I truly do not feel like I can keep up. I feel like I'm constantly learning, and I'm just excited for the chance to talk about these things in a very open fashion. We need more spaces for this.
Yeah, I hope that people will be open to the things that I've said and try not to take any too much offense with any of my admittedly rather strongly held opinions here. And also definitely appreciate like the opportunity to have thoughtful conversations. As I think you'll probably continue to notice listening to me interviewing my friends, and the people that I hang out with tend to be at kind of odd places along a gender and sexuality spectra. And so I think a lot of us have the experience of feeling like we don't clearly fit a label. And I think it's really affected the way that we then perceive ourselves and understand the world. And I think Doug is a great example of that, as you heard in that other previous episode where he was talking more about himself. Anyway, thank you for listening, and I will be back.